Acts 20 at verse 28. Pay careful attention to yourselves and to the flock in which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to care for the church of God, which he obtained with his own blood. As I said when we were doing the reading, this is at the start of what will be a study for a few weeks. I don't actually know how many weeks it will be. As we look together at the role of eldership, we're going to be, God willing, appointing new elders. And it's a really important thing to think about, not just in terms of the fact that we're going to be appointing new elders, but because the whole subject of eldership makes us think about our life as a congregation and how God has appointed his church to be structured. And so it's not just about those who are possibly going to become elders, it's about our whole church and how God has instructed things to be. We want things to be done in his order, in his way, and we want to make sure that we are basing our understanding of the whole thing on what the Bible teaches. It's the biblical teaching that is at the heart of what we do. So that's what we're going to be focusing on. And one of the reasons I want to do this is because I think that quite often there are misconceptions about eldership. And the reason I know that's true is because I myself had a lot of misconceptions about eldership. There was a lot of things that I thought about eldership that actually were not the case. So it's very easy to misunderstand things. And as I learned about how the Free Church works more and more and how what the Bible teaches about eldership, I realised that I had a lot of misunderstandings in my mind. So in order to kind of get our bearings, we're going to do something here. And I'm going to ask you, is this true or false? Now, you don't need to say it out loud. It's not like a quiz. I'm not kind of testing you. But I just want you to say it in your own minds, right? So when I read these out, tell me if you think this is true or false. Okay, so first one, you have to be a deacon before you can become an elder. Right in your head, is that true or false? Okay, what do you think? Right? The answer is false. Don't have to be a deacon before you become an elder. It's very important that we can ask that elders and deacons are two different offices. They are not a ladder. So funny how people think that there's a ladder in our church. I was speaking at the old folks thing in Bath on Monday night. They have like an old folks fellowship. You were there, weren't you, Tom? And on the way out, I was meeting everyone at the door, and this gentleman on the way out said to me, would you like to minister in Bath one day, you know, because obviously they knew that I was from there, and I just want to do whatever the Lord has for me, you know, and I'm very happy where I am. And he says, so you don't want to climb the ladder? So there you go, back is up a rung. I guess I'm at the bottom of the ladder here, but I hope that doesn't offend you too much. But anyway, that's the misconception, and we get the same misconception thinking that you go from deacon and then you get promoted to become an elder. That's not the way it is. Deacons, elders are completely separate things. Now, very often it will be the case that you'll be a deacon before you're an elder. That's very often the case, but it doesn't have to be that way. Okay, so, number one, I won't ask you if you got that right. I'm so tempted to, but I won't. Next one. Once you become an elder, you stop being a deacon. Okay, true or false? Answer that in your mind. True or false? The answer is false. Once you become a deacon, you stay a deacon for life. Once you become an elder, you stay an elder for life. And this is very important because the likelihood is in our own context that when we elect new elders, that will probably be deacons who are becoming elders. But they won't stop being deacons. And elders are still deacons. They still attend the deacon's court. They still have diaconal responsibilities. So, once you become an elder, you don't stop becoming a deacon. You're still a deacon. So, it's very important because I don't want people to think, oh, well, if we get new elders, we won't have enough deacons. Not true, because we have the same amount of deacons all the time. Once you become an elder, you're still a deacon. Okay? Good.
Question.
Yes?
Supposing someone was elected an elder without being a deacon,
yes,
would he not be a member of the deacon's court then?
Well, yes, in theory, yes, that's true. But when the Free Church's practice was written 160-odd years ago, they actually allowed for elders to sit on the deacon's court, even if they weren't previously elected deacons, purely because of numbers. So you could, if somebody became an elder who wasn't previously a deacon, they would be entitled to sit at the deacon's court. And it would be good, because we're a relatively small congregation. If we were huge, like Smithton, then probably some of the elders wouldn't attend the deacon's court, or wouldn't necessarily need to. But in a smaller context, people muck in. But it's an interesting one that it's been kind of accommodated to for practical purposes, if you know what I mean, rather than for theological ones. But if you're ordained a deacon, you stay there. And if you're ordained an elder, you stay there. And you can be both. So the two go together. Okay? So, false, false. Right. Next one. Minister is the senior elder. True or false? I hope you all know the answer to that. False. Absolutely, totally false. We believe in a thing called parity of elders. That means that they're equal. Now, there are differences. A minister, like me, is what we call a teaching elder, which we'll come to later in our study. And a non-minister elder is a ruling elder, but they are equal. They're absolutely equal. In terms of decision-making, in terms of authority, in terms of status, they're equal. So the minister is not above the elders, although many perhaps like to act like that. They are not above the elders. Okay, so the minister is not the senior elder. In fact, there is no such thing as that. No such thing as a senior elder. You can have the one who's been there the longest, but he's not ranking more highly or anything like that. The newly ordained elders are of absolutely equal status with the elders who've been there for many, many years. It's all absolutely equal. So there's no, the minister or no one else is the senior elder. Okay, so false, false, false. Last one, let's see what about this one. Elders are elected by popular vote. Those with the most votes are appointed. True or false in your minds? True or false? Gasps of horror. But it is actually false. And this is the one I want to mention, because this is something, it's almost true, but it's not completely true. It's not that we are elected. Elders are not elected by popular vote. It's not just a case of whoever gets the most votes gets it. Now, to emphasize how it works, I'm going to draw it. There's two principles for electing elders, right? The Kirk Session has to approve of the person. Okay? That's number one. The Kirk Session has to approve. And they have to have support of the majority of members. The two principles that are in the blue book, and you can see, as I hope will show, that's slightly different from just the most votes, and I'll explain why. This is the threshold of 50% of members. Okay, you have to have the support of 50% of the members in order to become an elder, right? So supposing we wanted to appoint 20 new elders. Obviously we can't, we don't have enough men to do that, but supposing we were a big church and we were appointing 20 new elders and we were voting, right? And you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. These 16 get more than 50%. These 14 get more than 50%. These 6 don't. They cannot become elders. Does that make sense? They cannot become elders because they don't have the support of the majority. So even though you want to vote 20, you say, we want to vote 20, unless all 20 are above that 50%, you can't appoint them. So it's not just a case of the most. So that's one way in which it works. The other way is, say you wanted to vote 10, right? Say you decided you wanted to appoint 10 elders, and 16 of them got more than 50%. So say this is Jeff at this end. I'll change that. I'll make that Thomas. So that's Thomas at this end. And this is Jeff here. And then there's 12 others. The KEP session wants to appoint 10. They can choose any of those 10. And they might decide that Thomas is too tall and spends too long preaching, and they decide they don't want to appoint him. Even though he's got the most votes, that doesn't guarantee that he's appointed. Because it has to be the KEP session approval and 50% of the congregation. Now, I don't know of any incidents where that happens, where that has happened with elders, where somebody with the most votes has not been appointed, but it could happen, because that's what the legislation says. And so, generally speaking, it is the most people who get the most votes will get appointed. But I just want to explain to you that that's how it works, because that is how it works. That's the rules that the Free Church has, and that is what we're trying for. Does that make sense, yeah? That's how it works. So, this is what I mean about sometimes, and the reason that I say that is because I thought that it was popular vote. I thought this was true. Most votes gets in. But it's not actually like that. It's slightly different. The elders are actually appointed by the Kirk session. So Kirk session has the final say, but they can only appoint those who have the above 50% of membership. So
the Kirk session could actually go against the wishes of the congregation?
Well, not technically, because they would be still appointing somebody who has more than 50% of the support, but they could, in a sense, go. I mean, it's imagine the situation where the Kirk session knows something about somebody that the congregation don't know. You know, now that could happen. You know, maybe somebody has a conviction or something or whatever that nobody else knows about, that the Kirk session knows about. And, you know, that can happen. And that's the situation. It's obviously very, very rare, and it doesn't apply in our situation at all, but it is the Kirk session that makes the final appointment.
But if the Kirk session knew that in advance, surely they wouldn't commit.
They would. Well, I would imagine that would be the case. You would think so. It doesn't always happen, though. No. I know of a situation where an elder was appointed because he got the vote, yet there was things about him that were questionable, and very quickly after his appointment, he ended up under a criminal charge. And a bit of foresight would have prevented that, you know. But it's not necessarily.
He then lost his eldership.
He lost his eldership then, but he perhaps should not have gone. All I'm saying is that it's the. All I'm trying to say here is this isn't my view. This is not me saying this is what I think. This is what the Blue Book of the Free Church of Scotland says. This is the way eldership works. Basically, a popular vote does all that, but that's just not what's in the letter of the law. Yeah, yes?
What happens if the 80 members and say 40 of them are too old and infirm to vote?
Yes.
In which case, you wouldn't make your quota.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think you would have to come to some sort of arrangement as to what would be considered good active membership. I mean, if you could theoretically have a significant proportion of your membership who were perhaps in a care home or something and who weren't aware of how to vote. And so what I would imagine in that situation, you'd have to come to some arrangement as a Kirk session and perhaps get an approval of the presbytery just to say we're doing it under this basis, you know, that we are taking 70% of our congregation as the eligible voters because of exceptional circumstances. I think you'd have to do something like that. But it's interesting, that's how it works. So the two things work together. That's the way. Anyway, that's enough about legislation. We need to talk about much more important things than that. Now, but the point in all that is there are misconceptions about eldership in lots of ways. And it's important that we think biblically and that we think clearly about what it really means to be an elder. So, we are going to ask basically two simple questions. We're going to ask, What is an elder? And what does an elder do? That's our questions. Now, we're not going to get through it all tonight, so we'll just go as far as we can tonight, and then we'll pick it up again, because I am really determined to get out of this habit of going on for too long. So we'll keep going as far as we can, and then we'll leave it and pick it up again. So, first question, what is an elder? And to answer that, we're going to look at these two verses, verse 17 and verse 28. There's two key words that are used in these verses to describe elders. In verse 17 it says, the elders, and in verse 28 it says, overseers. Okay, so these are the two words that are being described to use elders. Now, it's helpful for us to actually learn what the Greek words here. Now, before you freak out, I hope this will make sense, but we're going to look at the Greek words here. I think this is so exciting, but anyway. The Greek word for elder in verse 17 is this, presbyteros. Okay? And the Greek word for overseer in verse 28 is episkopos. Now, do you recognize those words? This is where we get the word presbytery, or presbyter. And this is where we get the word episcopalian. Some translations will translate that bishop. So, elders are presbyteros and episkopos. An elder is a presbyter, and an elder is an episkopos. Now, we have to basically ask the question, what do these words mean? Because these words lie at the heart of what being an elder is. What do they mean? Well, what does the word presbyter mean? We hear that all the time. Pre-Presbyterian church. Thomas is going to presbytery. Positively presbyterian. The word presbyter basically means
old.
Which is actually quite interesting, but it does mean old. In Luke 1:18, Zechariah says to Gabriel, how can I have a child since I am a presbytes? I'm an old man. It basically means old. That's where it comes from. And that's why we use the translation elder, elderly, somebody older, somebody old. Now, in terms of eldership, the emphasis is on seniority and on experience. If you look at an elder, it should be somebody who has an element of seniority. And when we come to the qualifications for elderships, Paul says in 1 Timothy 3, an elder should not be a recent convert. So there's this element of seniority. Now that does not mean that elders have to be over the age of 70. It does not mean that. Because in the New Testament, a lot of younger men were appointed elders. People like Timothy, they were young men. Paul died probably before he was 60. So Paul was probably in his 50s when he died. And he had been a leader for a long, long time. So it doesn't mean like a bubble. But it does mean somebody who has experience as a Christian. Now, that can take various forms. You might have a 30-year-old who's been a member for 20 years. You might have a 70-year-old who's been a member for 5 years. Now, in that context, the 30-year-old is more qualified than the 70-year-old. But really, if someone's been a member for 5 or 10 years, then I would say that, you know, if they're growing well, then they would be qualified, whatever their age. But the point I'm making is, although the word basically means old, we're thinking in terms of seniority, somebody with a bit of experience. And that can depend on our circumstances. It depends when we were converted. It depends when we went forwards. But the key point is, you don't want somebody who's just come in, somebody who has just come to faith in the last 6 months or the last year, or who is very, very new to the faith, very, very new to the church. They would not be considered ready by the New Testament legislation. They would have to wait until they're a little bit more senior. And so a presbyter is somebody with a bit of experience. It doesn't mean that a presbyter knows everything. An elder is not expected to know everything, because no elder knows everything. An elder, we all are learning so much, and we have so much to learn. But this word presbyter, presbytery, I can never remember how to spell it. Is there an E in it? Presbytery, E-R-Y. just the gathering of the presbyters, the elders. And when we say that we are a Presbyterian church, we are just saying that we are led by elders. You could call it an Elderian church if you wanted. But that doesn't really, it's not really easy to say. But that's basically what we mean. When you say Presbyterian, it doesn't mean harsh, it doesn't mean whatever people associate with Presbyterianism. It means elder-led. Elders make up the courts of the church. Elders lead it. So, presbyter, somebody who's experienced, somebody who can take a senior position in the church. The other word is episkopos, which is really interesting. It's translated sometimes the word bishop, and in the ESV it's translated overseer. Now, again, this is I just want to emphasize this point because it's good to know. In the Episcopal Church, in the Roman Catholic Church, in the Anglican Church, they would say that this and this are different things. So that's why you've got a priest, which some say comes from the word presbyter, priest. They have a hierarchy of a priest, then a bishop, then an archbishop. They've got this hierarchy. So they have that in the Episcopalian Church, in the Anglican Church, in the Roman Catholic Church, because they say that these are different things. Now, Acts chapter 20 is a key chapter for saying that that's not the case, because the elders who came from Ephesus are called, in verse 17, presbyters, and in verse 28, episkopos. They're the same thing. They're interchangeable terms. That's why we don't believe that bishops, we don't have bishops in our, that's why we don't have bishops in our church above us, because we believe that they are equal. But anyway, the key question is, what does it mean? What does episkopos mean? Well, I didn't actually know this until I started studying at all. I didn't realize this, but I thought it was really interesting. Episkopos is made up of two words, epi and skopos. Two Greek words, epi and skopos. Now, any ideas what skopos means? What do you use to look at the stars? Telescope. Skopos. Skopos means to look at something. It means a watcher, to watch. That's where we get the word scope, telescope, microscope, scope. Comes from this word scope, so you can see. So it's somebody who it's a watcher. The word epi just means over. So an overwatcher, or a watcher over her. A watcher over her. Which is why we've got the translation overseer. So episkopos means somebody who watches over someone. And I think that is a beautiful description of what it means to be an elder. An elder is somebody who watches over the congregation. One dictionary I looked at defined it like this, that an episkopos is one who watches over the welfare of others. And so when you think of an elder, that's their job, to watch over you, to make sure that you're okay, to guard you, to keep their eye on you. And so it's a real expression of care, a real expression of commitment, a real expression of concern. The elders are looking after the spiritual needs of the congregation. An elder's job is to make sure that you are okay in your Christian walk. And I think that's a beautiful description, and that's it's so helpful to look and see what these words actually mean. Somebody who watches over us. So that's our question. What is an elder? He is a presbyter, somebody senior, somebody with experience, and he is a watcher over her, an episkopos, someone who makes sure that you are safe. So that's the first question. That's what these, that's the New Testament words for elder. Our second question, which we're just going to start, we're not going to finish it, but we'll just start it, is what does an elder do? What does an elder do? Well, if you look at this verse, it gives two things, two verbs that an elder has to do. The two jobs of an elder are to pay careful attention and to care for the church. That's the job description of an elder. Pay careful attention and to care for the church. So I want to look at these two together. We won't be able to get into the second one, but we might get through the first one. Let's see how we get on. This first word, to pay careful attention, is a really interesting word. It literally means to have towards. That's what the literal word means. Just, it's the word to have and the word towards, joined together. To have towards. So it should be an S on the end of that. And it's used in various ways. Sorry. Oh, too far. Here we are. I have to just that. Here we have it in different verses. Same word in all these different verses. Matthew 6:1. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. So it means kind of being careful in that sense. Acts 16, one who heard us was a woman named Lydia from the city of Thyatira, a seller of purple goods, who was a worshiper of God. The Lord opened her heart to pay attention to what was said by Paul. Same word again, paying attention. Acts 5:35, Gamaliel says, men of Israel, take care what you're about to do with these men. The idea of being careful. So turning your attention, being careful. 1 Timothy 4 uses the word devote to translate the same word. Until I come, devote yourselves to the public reading of Scripture. It's the idea of just being really committed to something. And really interestingly, 1 Timothy 3 translates the word as addicted, because that's what it can also mean. Deacons likewise must be dignified, not double-tongued, not addicted to much wine, not greedy or dishonest gain. So that word, that word, that word, that word are all the same word that we have in Acts 28 describing what the elder should do. They should be utterly focused, addicted to looking after the congregation. It's a total devotion to them. And so the emphasis is that your mind, your focus, your commitment is towards your duties. And then it tells us that there's two things that you have to be devoted to. You have to be devoted to yourselves and to all the flock. And that's really, really interesting. It emphasizes the fact that an elder has to be devoted to himself and pay attention to himself. And that's a reminder that elders are constantly learning. And please don't ever think, any of you, that an elder is supposed to know it all from day one. Nobody does. An elder is constantly, constantly learning. I always remember going through college thinking, oh, well, I thought in first year, by second year I'll know enough. And then in third year I thought, oh, second year I thought, oh, well, by third year I'll know enough. And then in third year I thought, by the end of this I'll know enough. And then I reached the end of my final year and I just thought, oh dear. Because you never, ever feel like you know enough. But we're constantly learning. An elder is always learning. An elder is always a disciple, always a student. And so an elder is there to learn. And that's a good thing. And I know that all the potential elders in this congregation are terrified at the thought of it and think of themselves very unsuitable, but that's actually a very good thing to be feeling like. So an elder must pay attention to himself. But an elder must also take care of the flock. Now, this is where it's really important. We can ask the question, what are the main duties of an elder? And we might think to ourselves, well, an elder's got to serve the elements on a communion Sunday. An elder should be sitting at the front at the services. An elder has to have that formal position of status in the church. None of these things are priorities. None of them. The number one priority of an elder is to have his mind deeply and compassionately devoted to looking after the flock. And notice it says all the flock. And that's one of the wonderful words that I love that the Bible includes, that it emphasizes that every single member is precious. Every single member needs to be looked after. And so when you think of the Kirk session, it's a word that, it's two words that in many ways are probably shrouded in mystery to so many people. What does a Kirk session do? What happens at a Kirk session? What's the Kirk session saying? What's going on at the Kirk session? When you see those words, you should be thinking of the fact that God has appointed these men to take very, very good care of you. That's their job, to pay attention to themselves and to all the flock. It all comes back to the fact that God wants to look after you. And all of these structures are in place so that God can take care of you and take care of our congregation and bind us closer together so that by his grace we support one another, we look after one another, and we are helped along in life's journey. The Christian should never have to go it alone, because we're part of a church, we're part of a flock, we're being shepherded by the Kirk session, and over it all is our Heavenly Father helping us and leading us. We'll leave it there because I've run out of time, but we'll pick it up.
Have you any idea of where the idea of the elder box comes from?
No, I don't. I actually don't.
It was well back, I think.
It does. I mean, it's hard to say, Donnie, what that arose from. Because sometimes there's things that we've been doing for generations and we don't even know why we're doing them. And that's, again, why it's so important to come back to Scripture and think to yourself, well, you know... I mean, there's a question for you to ask. There's a question. You know, the flock needs to be looked after. Who should the elders be sitting beside? Me or the flock? I'm not saying that to be controversial at all. I'm just saying, let's let the Bible guide us, because this is what it's all about. We're looking after the flock. Let's bow our heads and pray together.